Earth and Sky.
Welcome to Clear Voices. Sharon Bagley is a science columnist for the Wall Street Journal. Her new book is called Train Your Mind, Change Your Brain. She spoke to Earth and Sky's Jorge Salazar in February 2007 about the ability of the adult brain to rewire itself and about the implications of this fact for playing music, for ailments such as post-traumatic stress disorder, and for the everyday stress we all experience. Here's Jorge Salazar with Sharon Bagley.
Sharon, welcome to Earth and Sky. So tell us about Train Your Mind, Change Your Brain. What's new here?
The book describes emerging research which takes aim at the very old notion, a dogma really, that the adult brain cannot change. And that turns out to be completely wrong. It was certainly a very pessimistic view of human potential, but it is, even more importantly, not correct. And instead, the adult brain can indeed change. Its structure can change, its function can change, its patterns of activity can change. And those changes can come about in response to our experiences. So I encapsulate it by saying that the brain is the product of the life that we lead.
What do you mean by the brain can change in response to experiences?
Well, let me give you one example having to do with illness and one that has to do just with regular life. I'll take the second one first. When you play a musical instrument, the part of the brain that's devoted either to the fingering digits, if you are playing a stringed instrument such as the violin, or all 10 of your fingers if you're playing a keyboard instrument such as a piano, that region of the brain literally expands. It grows. It's larger as a result of that experience. And the result of that, of course, is that you become more accomplished at the piano. What I found so interesting was that when an experiment was done in which some people played the piano, they learned a little five-finger keyboard exercise, and then their brains were analyzed before and after to see how much of the region that controls the fingers had changed. Exactly as I just was describing, it indeed grew larger. But the second part of the experiment was even more dramatic. They took an equal number of people, and rather than having them literally sit at the keyboard and, you know, work out this little piano harmony, they showed people the music, the sheet music, and told them, just think about playing the piano. Look at these notes and imagine how your fingers would move, but don't actually touch the keys. Anyway, so they did the same sort of brain imaging before and after, and they found that in the group of people who only thought about playing the piano exercise, the region of their brain that controls the fingers had also increased. And that was one of the earliest examples of where mere thought, you know, when I say thought, I probably shouldn't preface it by saying mere anymore because it's extremely powerful, but how thought can act back on the physical stuff, you know, this 3 pounds of tofu-like substance inside our skulls, how thoughts can act back on the physical stuff of the brain. And similarly, in instances of depression, of obsessive-compulsive disorder, researchers emerging showing that mental training, which is an umbrella term that encompasses everything from, oh gosh, meditation to how you think about your thoughts, cognitive behavior therapy. Anyway, those interventions, that pure mental activity, can also act back on the brain in ways that turn out to be therapeutic for patients with depression or OCD.
What does science know about how a person might use their own mental activity to heal themselves, say, from a traumatic experience, from post-traumatic stress disorder?
The post-traumatic stress disorder research is brand new. And PTSD is characterized by high activity, indeed unhealthy activity, in a particular region of the brain. You know, for those of you keeping score at home, it's called the ventromedial prefrontal cortex, and it's basically behind your forehead. And through this intervention, it's, you know, basically talk therapy, they were able to lower activity in this region in a way that enabled a number of the patients to emerge from their PTSD. This was the first such study. It's actually just being published this month in February. And the activity also reduced, or the intervention, I should say, reduced activity in another region of the brain called the amygdala, which is where our sense of fear, comes from. And obviously you can see how an overactive sense of fear plays a huge role in post-traumatic stress disorder. And again, cognitive behavior therapy is a form of talk therapy. It's not, you know, lying on a couch for 40 years. We're not talking about Woody Allen kind of, you know, sign up for psychoanalysis. But what it is basically is teaching patients to think about their thoughts in a different way. So in the case of PTSD, for instance, the therapy would involve what is it that you experienced? What emotions does it cause in you? Let's talk about it and see how you can reframe that experience, how you can think about it in a different way. Now, you know, obviously this 10-second version doesn't do the therapy justice, although it's not, as I said, 40 years on a couch. It does typically involve going into a therapist for maybe an hour a day, once a week, over the course of probably a couple of months. Obviously, it differs from patient to patient. But the point is, this result was achieved without medication in this case, and it shows, again, that a top-down phenomenon, again, how you think your thoughts, how you think about your thoughts, can then reach down into the, in this case, the function, the activity of the brain in a therapeutic way.
You've written on how the adult brain can not only change, but it can rewire itself. What do you mean by that?
This has to do with, when we say rewiring, we mean new or different connections between different regions of the brain. So in the case of PTSD, for instance, what seems to happen is that the connections between the front part of the brain and the fear-generating part of the brain, which is deeper down into the brain, that becomes stronger, so that the thinking front part of the brain inhibits the fear-generating part of the brain. That wiring becomes stronger. So it's not clear whether there are more connections or whether the connections that exist are just more robust, but the effect is, as I described, that PTSD symptoms diminish significantly. Perhaps another example would help in the case of stroke, for instance, where a particular region of the brain has been knocked out with the result that, let's say, your right arm has become immobilized. Usually, in most people, the right arm is controlled by a little region of the motor cortex on the left side of the brain. Through a particular therapy that also relies on the power of neuroplasticity, scientists are able to coax a completely different region of the brain, sometimes in the mirror opposite side of the brain, to take over the function of the injured part of the brain. So in that sense, it's a rewiring, because the connections between the new part of the brain that you've induced to, you know, step up to the plate as a pinch hitter almost, and the arm in this case, have become either stronger or, again, new. Again, it's not completely clear what the cellular mechanism is, but something has been rewired, with the result that stroke patients who previously could not move an arm, and this also works with lower limb, with leg stroke paralysis, are once again able to do so. So by rewiring, I mean that either new connections are forged or existing connections are strengthened.
In your book, Train Your Mind, Change Your Brain, you write about stress and how stress also physically changes the brain.
Well, the first thing is exactly as you're saying, to recognize that stress is, you know, just completely toxic to the brain. It can literally reduce the strength of synapses, which are connections between the brain cells. It seems that it can also reduce the size of particular brain regions. So stress is something you want to reduce as much as possible. And as for techniques, there have been just a number of them that have been shown to be effective. In the case of the research that I was describing, it was one or another form of meditation. And when I say one or another form, I don't mean to be, you know, just not specific enough, but I say that because virtually every form of meditation has been shown to have beneficial effects in reducing stress, measured by lowering levels of the stress hormones that are in your bloodstream, lowering blood pressure. So whether it's transcendental meditation, different forms of Buddhist meditation, there are just loads of techniques that are out there which people can learn either through tapes, through a simple course, or, you know, really even being self-taught.
Do we know what limits exist in the ability to change one's brain? How far can we go with this?
That's a great question. And the short answer is we don't know the limits, but in the past we have sold the brain short and we have assumed that the limits are much lower than they in fact are. Now, you know, we were talking about how thought therapy, how thinking about your thoughts differently has dramatic effects, beneficial effects on PTSD and depression, and we didn't talk about it, but it also applies to obsessive compulsive disorder. So then the question naturally arises, well, can you think your way out of schizophrenia? Can you think your way out of autism and some of the other, you know, really, really serious brain disorders? And, you know, if I had to bet a nickel today, I would say no. I would say that those are too extreme, as is probably Alzheimer's disease and Parkinson's disease, and they will require interventions that are, you know, probably medication-based, that cognitive behavior therapy, new ways of thinking, meditation, these are not going to be effective. You know, on the other hand, I think science should be, and in fact it is, more open-minded about the possibility that other inputs, other interventions, in other words, other something that gets into the brain might indeed produce changes that can lead to treatment of even these serious disorders. Again, and that's probably more of a hope. Certainly it's not a reality at this point. But again, to me, the bottom line is we have been too pessimistic about the brain's malleability, about its ability to change, to respond to experience, to recover. We've been too pessimistic about those for too long that I think we have to at least be open to the possibility that these other changes can be discovered.
That was author Sharon Bagley. Her new book is called Train Your Mind, Change Your Brain. This has been an Earth and Sky podcast.
We're at earthsky.org.